Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Meow, 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 meow,
meow, I want chicken. I want liver. Meow mix, meow mix, please deliver. We should make that a real song.
You threw me off with the beatbox, and I was like, oh, we're still going.
Oh, we're definitely still going. How's it going, everybody? Oh, sorry. How are you doing today, everybody? My name is Jimmy Wong. You're listening to the Command Zone Podcast.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. Well, if you couldn't tell, we have a theme for today's episode.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you saw the Game Nights episode, you would understand what the theme is as well.
You probably saw it by now.
If you've seen Super Troopers, you also know what the theme is by
you
now.
You saw, what's the Mike Myers movie? Was it Goldmember? Which Austin Powers is it?
It is Austin Powers. Wait, yeah. Goldmember is a different movie. Wait, no.
Which one of them? I know it's in one of the
I think it's the first one.
Oh, okay.
I think it's the first
one. It's just
one.
Austin Powers?
Yeah, Austin Powers.
Okay, gotcha.
For a second, I was like, Austin Powers. No, you mean the movie Mike Myers. I'm like, no, they're interchangeable.
You got mixed with Baby Driver and the Mike Myers show?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I was very confused when I first heard about Mike Myers, the killer.
Yeah, Michael Myers?
Michael Myers, yeah. Anyway, today we are going back and continuing our review of all of the Commander 2017 decks. And, of course, we are dealing with Arabo, the kitty, today, considering we just meowed 1,000 times at you.
Yep, we're going to do the same thing we've done for all the decks. We're going to do a quick breakdown. This is not like a full retune or fully tuned version of the deck. This is if you pick up the precon and you just want to make some quick upgrades, maybe a dozen or so cards.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about what cards you should add in, what cards you maybe should take out. And if you want to get this deck for yourself, which you do, or any of these C17 decks, well, remember that, C17. Because if you go to cardkingdom.com/C17, that's where you need to order them. Because you'll be supporting this show, you'll be supporting Game Nights, you'll be helping to make all this content possible, and you'll be doing the thing you really want to do, which is get Magic cards.
Yeah, also, you don't need to leave your house to do so. It just comes to you at a lightning-fast pace.
Now, you know, despite evidence to the contrary, these decks are not out yet.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pre-order them right now, and like Jimmy said, they will appear at your doorstep almost magically, almost as soon as they're out. Because that's how Card Kingdom rolls.
Yeah. The other sponsor for the show is Ultra Pro. And Ultra Pro is another company, obviously, you can buy sweet products from when you go to cardkingdom.com/C17 or just whenever you're in an LGS or you're shopping around, you're looking for a new playmat, a new sleeve. The
or any online retailer, really.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. Ultra Pro is great. It's awesome having them as a sponsor as well because I run into their products every day without even thinking about Magic. I'll come across an Ultra Pro like, oh, look at these card sleeves. Like, Ultra Pro, excellent.
It's really upped our like game as far as our playmat game, our deck box game, our sleeve game. So I like that. Our dice game. Oh, our dice game is good now.
Oh, our dice game is great.
Yours was always pretty good. Mine hasn't been, but now it's up to snuff.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ultra Pro. And the final way to support the show is directly by going to patreon.com/commandzone. In fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode.
So lucky.
And this episode is dedicated to Henry Ayala. Henry, you rock.
We should have done the Nala today because his last name kind of rhymes with it.
That's true.
But instead we have Arabo, which
sorry, Henry.
Starts with the same letter A, though. So
we failed you with the rhyming thing.
Yeah. All right, so let's get right into it. We are talking about a quick and easy upgrade to the precon. We're not overhauling it completely because if we did, we would probably just keep the commander and Sol Ring and like maybe a couple other cards in there.
I'd say there's a lot of the sort of cat tribal stuff you would keep.
Yeah.
But because Cat Tribal's not super deep, but obviously it would change a lot. And
it got much deeper thanks to this set, actually. There are a couple of cards we'll talk about today that are like the cat equivalent of other very famous and very good cards in the Commander, which is kind of funny.
And we're also going to do our normal thing, which is go over the deck, the pre-con, just so you can take a look at the statistics. And that gives us a lot of information when we play the deck for the first time, just how it's going to play, the things you need to think about.
Well, not to mention, we actually played these decks on game nights.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point.
And my goodness, it was a lot of fun, but I ran into a few things that we will talk about on this episode and we'll go into. Yeah. So the point of these episodes, again, if you're a new player, if you're someone that just bought these decks that wants to get a little more competitive with their scene but doesn't have, you know, hundreds of dollars to shell out for a fully tuned deck, this is a great way to get started without completely overwhelming yourself at the same time.
Yeah, really good point. Okay, well, let's talk about the cat deck. We're going to start with the new legendary cards in the deck.
Surprisingly, they're all cats.
They're all cats. I'll go.
Sure.
First, we have Miri, Weatherlight Duelist.
Miri's back.
Miri is one, a green and a white, so 3 mana total for a 3/2 legendary creature, Cat Warrior. Miri has first strike and says, whenever Miri attacks, each opponent can't block with more than one creature this turn.
That's really, really interesting, interesting
because it doesn't say only Miri can attack. So you can attack with 10 things, and Miri's one of them. They can only block with one thing. Mm-hmm. Seems good. Also says, as long as Miri is tapped, no more than one creature can attack you each combat. That's pretty good because
cool.
You don't have to worry about crackback so much.
So much, right? It's like a weaker propaganda-esque effect. You better hope that one creature is not one with Annihilator.
True.
But
it's kind of crawl space-ish or whatever. I mean, you can still block. You don't have to attack with everything. You could leave something back to block.
Yeah.
I mean, Annihilator, that won't help you. But
I mean, the cool thing is that it incentivizes you to tap her or to attack with her.
Yeah.
And the fact that they can only block with one creature means that, one, if they do decide to block Miri, her being first strike and with some equipment, is going to destroy that creature most likely.
She's going to be really hard to block.
Yeah.
This card seems like there's probably some really good ways. This is probably a very powerful card.
Miri has now been in 3 different colors. She was once black in Miri the Curse, but they've all had first strike.
So that's her one. Her colors change, but she's always very fast.
Yes.
Gotcha.
For some reason, she was also a flyer when she became a vampire cat. Vampires
fly, I guess.
I guess so.
So that's one of our options for the commander of the deck.
The other option is the one at the very front of the deck. It's Arahabo, Roar of the Wild, 3, a green and a white, for a 5/5 legendary creature cat avatar. It's got Eminence. We've talked about this in other episodes. Eminence is an ability that allows your creature to affect the game from inside the command zone or on the battlefield. If you guys played with Deserts recently in the last set, they also work in a similar
graveyard.
Way because they work in the graveyard or on the battlefield. So
Aloro's the big comparison we use a lot.
Aloro as well, yeah. So Eminence, at the beginning of combat on your turn, if Arahabo, Roar of the Wild is in the command zone or on the battlefield, another target cat creature you control gets +3/+3 until end of turn. Pretty cool. It gives it a giant growth at sorcery speed. Actually, not sorcery speed. Technically, it's instant speed, but it's always at the beginning of combat on your turn. And then if Arahabo's in play, whenever another cat you control attacks, you may pay a 1, a green, and a white. If you do, it gains trample and gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is its power. So these actually work together
in
tandem.
Yeah, you can stack them, right?
So if Arahabo's on the battlefield, you're going to have access to both sides of his ability. And if a cat, you go into combat, you give a cat +3/+3, and then that cat is going to attack, and then you can pay more to pump that up to get +X/+X. Minimum is going to be at least another +3/+3.
So. Right. If it was somehow a 0/3 cat, it would be a 3/6, and then it would have 6 power. Although most of the time, you're going to be way above that, right?
Yeah.
Especially with equipment and whatnot. Eminence, very powerful. This is an aggressive one. I mean, we saw this in Game Nights. If you haven't watched Game Nights, we're going to refer to it a little without spoiling the ending or anything. But we did see that, wow, you can swing for a lot really early.
Very early. The only problem is that players start with 40 life.
Yeah.
So
the +3 doesn't scale super well because it just stays as 3 damage no matter what happens. So.
And combat towards one person is only going to make one real enemy out of you and usually leave you pretty open. So Arahabo was really good, though. I never actually ended up using the second part of this ability in the game, even though I felt like I should have a couple of times. I just would rather have developed out my board, and that's something we'll talk about as well in this
episode. The fact that they know which one you've given it to, although it is trample, it does give trample, so that part's good, but it makes it sort of less good. You can't give it to the creature that doesn't get blocked or things like that. I mean, it's sort of a Zenigosi at that point.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think the card's good. It's probably the least powerful Eminence ability of the 3, I think.
Yeah.
Or sorry, of the 4, counting Ur-Dragon, Edgar, and Inala. But just having any Eminence ability, I think, is good. Like, right, we talked about this. It's an enchantment that starts in your command zone, basically. You can't get rid of it. It's just an effect you get for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to another legendary creature in the deck. It's Balin, Wandering Knight. This one you can't actually run as the lead singer of this deck straight out of the box because you'd have to be mono-white, and so I don't know what you would do. You'd have to completely overhaul the deck. But it's interesting that this is a legendary creature in the deck that you could build a deck around. Balin is 2 white-white for a 3/3 legendary creature. Cat Knight has first strike. Balin has double strike as long as 2 or more equipment are attached to it. And you can pay one in a white and attach all equipment you control to Balin.
That's actually really cool.
I mean, you can do that at instant speed, and it doesn't care where the equipment you control are. So you can swing with a few creatures, and the other creatures have the equipment.
Yeah.
And then they don't block Balin, and you put it all onto Balin. Now has double strike and
trample, lifelink.
I'm assuming, yeah, vigilance. Untap all your lands, make people discard cards, yeah. Do two damage to stuff.
Oh, right, the swords.
That kind of stuff. I mean, the swords aren't in this deck, sorry.
Here's the thing. You have to always block Balin.
Depending. I mean, you could see what's out there.
Yeah.
So think if you have something that lets you play equipment at instant speed, like Sigarda's Aid, now all of a sudden, I mean, that's terrifying because you could play anything and then use Balin's ability to suddenly equip it.
Yeah.
So if you ever have Sigarda's Aid and you attack with Balin, they're literally like, I don't know, anything could happen. Like, any kind of equipment. It does seem good. There's been a lot of equipment commanders, though, and I don't know that it's, like, so much better than all the rest that it's, like, all of a sudden a game changer. I still think SRAM's probably better.
I do actually think SRAM is better just because you know you can draw cards with it. And if you're going to play mono white and you don't have that kind of guarantee, that or you play SRAM in the deck and just hope you draw him, but that's not what I like to do.
I just don't like to fold to one Vandal Blast or something like that, right? Which I feel like Balin's still going to do, whereas SRAM gets around it by having enough
this
card draw.
Entire deck folds to, to that and Vandal Blast.
All right, so there is one more legendary creature left, and he comes with his own equipment, which is also legendary, so we'll probably have to read that just because you want to get the full picture. So
this is Nazan, Revered Bladesmith. For 4, a green and a white, you could also cast Sigarda. Just kidding. This is a 5/4 legendary creature cat artificer. When Nazan, Revered Bladesmith enters the battlefield, search your library for an equipment card and reveal it. If you reveal a card named Hammer of Nazan this way, put it onto the battlefield. Otherwise, put that card into your hand, then shuffle your library. So his first ability allows you to tutor any equipment. And then the second ability on him is whenever an equipped creature you control attacks, you may tap target creature defending player controls. So not as relevant, because to really have that be effective, you have to have multiple creatures being equipped with different things, and that's just so much mana that I don't think that's ever
going
to happen.
Most equipment decks are not going wide, although this one does kind of out of the box have like it's straddling both worlds a little bit,
yeah,
which is not necessarily good. Let me read Hammer of Nazan, because if you do get Hammer of Nazan with Nazan, you actually get to put this on the battlefield.
Yeah,
so
it's a 4-mana spell, too. So
yeah, so you kind of get 4 mana for free. So Hammer of Nazan is 4 mana for an artifact, legendary artifact equipment. Whenever Hammer of Nazan or another equipment enters the battlefield under your control, you may attach that equipment to target creature you control. So you skip equip costs. And then equip creature gets +2/+0 and has indestructible. It does have an equip cost of 4, so you know if the creature it's on dies and you need to put on something else, all of a sudden it's kind of expensive at that point.
It's kind of cool, though. It's an enchantment on an artifact equipment, right? Because it's like whenever this or another equipment enters, you can just equip it.
To any of your creatures, too. It doesn't have to be to Nazan or whatever the hammer's equipped to. It's interesting because Nazan guarantees that you'll get the Hammer of Nazan when you play.
And that ability to be able to equip automatically is probably one of the best things you can do in an equipment-based deck. So
it's cheating of mana cost. I mean, we always talk about it, right? You wouldn't think of it that way, but the equip cost is sort of factored in when you're balancing the power level of an equipment. So all of a sudden, if you build a Nazan deck, you can put in stuff you wouldn't normally put in with really tough equip costs because you're guaranteed going to get the Hammer of Nazan.
Yeah. I actually would have played, I think, preferably Nazan as the leader because of the card advantage you get. You get a free card, and then the enchantment part of this ability is sweet.
Yeah, and making something indestructible is really good.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you're spending that much mana to equip it onto it, yeah.
So this card is interesting, and I think what it allows you to do is sort of build around something that's not the commander, right? You can build around the legendary hammer because you know you're going to get it. Now, of course, it can still be destroyed, and you can be in a world of hurt, so you need ways to get it back. So that's interesting. Having played the deck, you would lean toward Nazan as the commander, you think?
Yeah, I mean, like, you get to start with 9 cards in your hand now instead of 8.
Yeah.
And you get to cheat a lot of mana costs early, which is pretty good, especially if you can ramp out Nazan. So I think Nazan basically is better than Arabo because...
Straight out of the box.
Straight out of the box, because I don't want to be... I mean, like, look, the combat from Arabo is great and all that, but it's at odds. His second ability is at odds with equip costs that are all throughout this deck in terms of equipment.
You could look at it this way, which is that Arabo gives +3/+3 to something. Nazan gives +2/+0 and indestructible through his hammer to something. So
And then other equipment coming in. So like, think of the mana you'll save over time. In fact, one after seeing this card and playing the game in Game Nights, I wish I had drawn that card earlier, either Nazan or his hammer, because that would have made my plays so much better.
Yeah.
Because there's so many times I was like, I'll just equip here and pass turn, I guess. Or like, or I'll play an equipment and then think about like, dang, do I have enough to place and equip at the same turn? Maybe it's not worth it to play it. So knowing that that cost is gone is really important. All right.
Oh, ooh. our favorite section.
Stats. So let's break down the statistics of this deck. The first thing I want to look at is, of course, card draw. And there's only 3 to 4 cards in this deck that really are going to draw you cards. And that's if you're counting Dreamstone Hedron and Hedron Archive, which are ramp cards that you sacrifice to draw.
Yeah, I count those only as like half a card draw spell each, yeah. Right?
They're so not even closer to like 3.5 in terms of actual
cards. And one of them we know is Harmonize.
Yep.
Which is like an okay card draw spell, but it's not like recursive.
It's Harmonize and Soul's Majesty. Now, like, there are a couple of card value cards in here, like when a equipped creature dies, flip cards until you reveal X. Or
we do not count those as card draw, even though they're card advantage.
Yeah.
We did an entire episode about the differences between card draw and card advantage, but you really want card draw to even out your deck for the times when you don't draw mana and you need to hit your land drops on time. And just to give you enough options, like I need to find removal. Well, a lot of those other effects don't find you removal.
Yeah, and if Hedron Archive is one of your main card draw spells and you're not hitting lands, well, you're not playing Hedron Archive anytime soon either.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
However, there are 9 total dedicated ramp cards, and that includes, again, Dreamstone Hedron and the Hedron Archive, but also they have a Cultivate in here. There is a new Traverse the
Outlands,
which is, we talked about this in our Commander overview, one of the sweetest ramp cards I've ever seen.
That is good with Arbo, I'll say.
Yeah, exactly. It's a 2-color deck. There were 6 instances of targeted removal. They were very specific, though. A couple of them actually have enchantment and artifact on them as opposed to creature. So I would think, you would think, oh, they have a lot of board wipes. Nope, there are only 2 board wipes in this deck. So in terms of targeted removal, you're actually lacking a lot in trying to get rid of creatures. You can kill artifacts and enchantments very easily with this deck, as green white should be able to, but you cannot do anything else really outside of that.
A little of the targeted removal is like kill target creature with flying too, stuff like that. So it won't just reach out and kill anything. It's kind of conditional.
Yeah, there's no path. There's none of those
cards.
There's
a swords.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's in the vampire deck.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. However, there are 24 cats.
Meow, 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 meow. How long do I have to keep going? That's it.
The rest of the episode.
Meow, 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 meow. Just kidding.
All right. And so 24 cats. There's a lot of Cat Matters cards in here.
That's actually less cats than I would think.
Yeah. I counted through them because there are also 14 equipment cards.
Because we saw in the Wizards deck there was 30 Wizards. And spoiler alert, hold on, let me look at my notes. The Dragon deck has 29 Dragons. So we haven't broken down the Vampire deck yet, but I think that's going to be the least amount of any of the tribal type.
It is, and I think it's because they have a ton of equipments.
So it's like the equipment theme is actually pretty strong in this deck.
It's almost a little too strong, in my opinion, because it's just a hard strategy to play in Commander. But yeah, there's 14 equipment cards and 6 creatures that care about equipment, whether it's equipped, whether it's equipped while it attacks, et cetera, et cetera. And then there are 4 creatures that care specifically about attacking. So this deck, I think, has a very specific goal, which is ramp, ramp, ramp. Don't draw many cards. Don't use many board wipes, but play cats and equipment and then swing. Pretty straightforward.
Doesn't seem like you're super impressed with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big part of the deck is they want to make it hard for your opponents to block. And if this is a one-on-one deck, that certainly would be the case. And there are a decent number of ways to be evasive with the deck, whether or not you're using trample or you have, you know, just ways to get around creatures or just have people not block because it's just not going to be a good block for them.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a lot of potential to gain life in the deck because there's a couple equipments in here that have lifelink and stuff. So I guess that's sort of the battle against not dying quickly.
Where are we here?
Rampant card draw.
Oh, okay.
Rampant card draw. Rampant growth. No, ramp and card draw. So the ramp looks good.
Yeah, 9 is a good amount.
Yeah, that's a great amount, actually. But there weren't that many mana rocks, which kind of makes me a little concerned, too, because mana rocks fit very well into a deck like this because you don't care about the color of mana you need to use to pay equip costs.
So you could put the bigger ones like Thrawn Dynamos and stuff in?
Yeah, because you're going to actually be using, and you're not going to
strain your two-color deck. Base.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the card draw is really low, especially for a white-green Voltron-y deck. You need to draw as many cards as possible in this deck. And there's no repeated card draw. There's nothing that really gets you there in terms of, hey, just like, would you like to draw some cards?
And the answer to that question is always yes.
Always yes.
Yeah.
But it has Soul's Majesty and Harmonize, which are good card draw cards in green. Don't get me wrong. They're just not sort of where you want to be for a deck like this.
Well, they definitely, you don't want those to be like your main ones. It's not like Harmonize is bad, but yeah. You can't reuse it. It's not going to give you a ton of card advantage. It's a good like little infusion, but it'd be nice to have some ways that you can just repeatedly.
And it's definitely the main ones in this deck too. So, womp womp. All right, board wipes and targeted removal. Two board wipes? Yeah.
Yeah, I know people like to think like I'm a deck that's going to leverage my board position to win. Therefore, I don't want board wipes. But we've just seen over and again that there are so many situations you get into in Commander where board wipes the only way that you have a chance in the game. It doesn't matter what type of deck you are. You know, somebody else is in the lead at some point by such a large margin, or two of your opponents are, that a board wipe, no matter what kind, you could be a token deck and you're still wishing for a board wipe. So I just always hate to see less than like three or four.
Not to mention, like, Route is one of the board wipes and it's just not that good.
It's okay. At least you can instant speed it if you want to.
Yeah, I would just much rather have Wrath of God that I can use on four.
Yeah. So you can do something after.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you're playing in the later turn. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's look at the best cards that come in the deck. One of them is a card that I think is just awesome. However, it is super limited because it is only a cat-based thing. It's Casali Slingers.
Good in this deck since
don't
want to
know what they're slinging up in the trees. 4 and a green for a 3/5 cat warrior with reach. They're reaching out with those kitty claws. Whenever Casali Slingers or another cat enters the battlefield under your control, you may destroy target artifact or enchantment. It's Aura Shards.
Aura Shards for cats, yeah. And Aura Shards is such an oppressively good card.
Yeah, it's a fancy feast up in here, yeah. You know. I got that from VGHS, actually.
That seems like a good card in this deck. 24 cats is not as many as I'd like. I think you would want to push the amount of cats.
Yeah, if
just
you're
in
play
general,
like
especially, yeah.
It's cool, though, because it does count itself. So for 5 mana, you get to destroy target artifact or enchantment.
And
you
get a 3/5 with reach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If it didn't do that, it would be slightly worse, and I would just be like, just play Aura Shards. What are you doing? You can play creatures.
But you can play both Aura Shards and that.
Yeah, exactly.
With Aura Shards out, that destroys two artifacts and enchantments.
Oh my gosh.
That's pretty good.
Here's the thing, though. I've also realized that you only need to like blow up three or four to really make the impact you need to.
Well, it changes the way people play. They won't play the important stuff, so it sort of it cramps them in the way that like it slows them down. They're not willing to sort of just play it out so you kill it for free. And that's another thing. Even if you don't have a cat in your hand, you play Casali Slingers. They don't know if you don't have a cat in your hand, so they have to hold back that card. So it's interesting. I think that card is really good just because that effect is really good.
Yeah.
Aura Shards is just one of those cards. Every time it hits the table, like you're just like, oh, crap.
Not like this. Yeah. Ugh.
This is another one you have marked as one of the best cards in the deck. I think this is one of the best new cards in the entire Commander 2017 set.
It's really cool.
It's Traverse the Outlands. We mentioned it earlier. It's 4 and a green for a sorcery. Search your library for up to X basic land cards where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. Put those cards onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. We talked about this in the first look episode of when we overviewed the entire set. And, I mean, we'll play Explosive Vegetation. I played Explosive Vegetation in a lot of decks. This is one mana more, and I can't imagine that it's usually going to find you less than like four or five lands. So that is incredible to me. The only downside is it's basic land, so in some higher four and five color decks, maybe you don't have enough basics, but boy, what a downside. Oh no, I have to get all the basics that are left in my deck. That's too bad. I can only get six instead of eight
lands. And it's ramp too. It's not a tax, whatever.
Yeah, it's not like land tax or whatever. Yeah, these go on the battlefield tapped. Like, yeah, this card is incredibly good. I think this is going to be one of the cards that sort of makes it out of this set into the most amount of decks total.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm putting in a few decks for sure.
For sure.
Definitely two color decks. Three color is a little tough. Of course, one of the best cards, or I'm just going to split it between two equipments because they're both equally good. It's an equipment deck, Sword of the Animist. Just a card that I think every single two color and below deck should have if you're creature based. It's two mana for a legendary artifact equipment, and then it gets +1/+1 to equip for two. And whenever an equipped creature attacks, you may search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle your library. So
you just rampant growth every time you attack.
Yeah, and it's what this deck wants to do, which is equip evasive creatures. And so having this on top of everything else, of a trample, lifelink, whatever, hasty creature with hexproof, you get a land. It's pretty good.
Pretty good. That card, that should see more play, you're right, especially in like decks without green. I mean, it's still good in decks with green. But another one you have pegged as best cards is... Well, if this card is ever in a deck, it's one of the best cards in the deck because it's one of the best cards ever printed. It's Skull Clamp, one mana, artifact equipment, costs one to equip. Target of equipped creature gets plus one, negative one. And then whenever equipped creature dies, you draw two cards. So you can equip it to one ones, and they immediately die. You draw two cards. So this often says, you know, pay one, draw two. It also just works on creatures that aren't one ones, so that if they die, you'll get two cards out of it.
Yeah.
And there's not much card draw on the deck, so this is one of the ways you can draw cards.
And it's so cheap to equip. Just one.
Does this make it five card draw spells then, or is that...
Nah, this isn't. This is so situational. If there were a lot of X1s in the deck, I would definitely count it, but this deck has a lot of buts. So this is more just disincentivizing people from removing your creatures, which is, again, what you want to do in a deck like this, is keep your few creatures very much alive.
Yeah, it just doesn't count as card draw unless you're making 1/1s or something, and this deck's not really doing that.
Nope.
Okay.
But this deck is giving us some cool new cards.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the new Commander 2017 cards that come in the deck.
This one's kind of exciting. Alms Collector. It's 3 and a white for a 3/4 cat cleric with flash. If an opponent would draw 2 or more cards, instead you and that player each draw a card. So let's say someone goes, I'm going to brainstorm.
True.
You can flash this guy in, and then they brainstorm for one card off the top, and then you
get a card.
And you get to draw a card, too.
Plus, it stays out, so it's not like it's just for that one time.
And then the opponent has to put two cards back on top.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point.
But let's say someone has a Consecrated Sphinx out, then you're drawing along with them. However, you could actually draw each other out if you wanted to, because every time you draw another card, they get to draw two.
Yeah, in
so
which
then
case
you get to draw one, and then they get to draw two. So you both get to draw cards with each other for as long as you want.
That's interesting. It works really good against just like
actually, they get to choose, because this is not a May ability, but Consecrated Sphinx is. So
right.
They get to choose. So if your deck's smaller than the Consecrated Sphinx player,
they can draw you out.
They can draw you out. So don't do that.
Well. I mean, they're not. They'll almost draw themselves out because they're only drawing one still.
Yeah,
they don't get to draw two, so they probably won't. They'll probably stop at a reasonable time. I don't know. Then there's cards like Sphinx's Revelation, so they just tap out 10 mana, and you go, no, you can have one, and I'll have one. This is brutal.
Yeah, it's not like drawing 10, you split it in half. It's no, it goes all the way back down to one.
This is something they've brought out recently for white, which is sort of trying to stop other people from drawing cards. Mm-hmm. There was the Spirit of the Labyrinth, I think, kind of did a similar thing. So it's an interesting thing they're trying. I would rather they just added more card draw to white, but it is what it is. I think that card's okay. It's going to get some people sometimes.
Even if it doesn't get some people, it can just kind of sit there and cause an effect, right?
Wreak a little bit of havoc for people that are like, oh man, I would play my Harmonize, but that thing's stopping it.
Imagine if there was a freaking Howling Mine out. You draw tons of cards with Alms Collector.
Yeah, I guess so.
Every turn.
Is that how it works? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, no. You know what? I'm wrong. It doesn't, because they have to draw two cards at that moment. If an opponent would draw two or more cards,
So it's not like it wouldn't work with Rhystic Study.
Right.
Because Rhystic Study, you draw a card and then you draw a card and then you draw a card. You don't ever draw two cards. But Font of Mythos, say.
Right. There we go.
That would work.
There you go.
New cards, everybody. We're not judges, so we may get some rulings wrong or some stuff wrong.
I never make a mistake.
Take it easy. Another new card, speaking of which, is Stalking Leonin. It's 2 and a white for a 3/3 cat archer. When Stalking Leonin enters the battlefield, secretly choose an opponent. So this is like conspiracy where... you would write down like the name of a card. So when you play Stalking Leonin, you like somehow, you know, what we would usually do is just on a piece of paper write somebody's name and then put it face down. So you name an opponent and then reveal the player you chose. This is at instant speed. And then it says exile target creature that's attacking you. If it's controlled by the chosen player, you can activate this ability only once. So, you know, I play Stalking Leonin on the table. I secretly write down Jimmy's name, and I wait patiently until Jimmy attacks me with something, and then I can flip it up and go, ha-ha, you were the player that I secretly chose.
You would do that to me.
I am going to exile that creature that's attacking you, but it's like a one-use thing. Now I've used it. It's gone.
Yeah.
But if you can blink Stalking Leonin, you could reset it because it's an enter the battlefield effect.
Yeah.
So this could be good with, you know, some blinkiness. Like, so maybe it's good in Rune, Brago, you know. It's good with Deadeye. Everything's good with Deadeye.
Yeah, I like the ability to flicker it immediately and then choose someone new.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that actually Deadeye, you could just gun down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, you could do it during the declare blockers phase and just reveal it to you, blink it, comes back in, write down the next name, reveal it.
Yeah,
Do it again and again.
I think so.
Yeah, because that's what makes Deadeye so broken is it doesn't come back at end step. It just comes back now.
Yeah, so they all have to attack you at the same,
But they're still attacking.
They're still attacking you,
So,
because the revealing, You can instant speed reveal the player you chose.
I can reveal that name anytime I want.
But at that point, you exile target creature that's attacking you. So you're incentivized to do it during the combat. And it says activate this ability only once. So when you flicker it, you're able to do it again. That's the whole point of flickering.
Yeah, exactly. So,
man, this card's kind of sweet with that Deadeye.
Like I said, newsflash, Deadeye Navigator's good. I don't know if that makes this card good. I think this card's fine.
It's fine.
It's probably some politically type crap where you like play it and then nobody knows who you chose. I feel like 90% when you play it, everyone's going to know, right?
Because there's only going to be one deck that's going to be more.
There's only going to be one thing out on the table at any given moment that's clearly the most scary thing. But if you're smart, here's what you do.
You don't choose that player.
Yeah, you choose somebody else because that player is just going to avoid you because they're going to assume, well, I've got the Ur-Dragon out, so he's going to have chosen the Ur-Dragon, so I'm not going to attack. And now you have protection against two things, basically, until you have to reveal it, in which case now the Ur-Dragon player goes, oh, you didn't choose me, stupid. I attack you.
Yeah. Well, hopefully at that point you've dealt with that. This is, by the way, the third time the word secretly has appeared on a card. Menacing Ogre is the only other commander legal card that does it, but that's not even choosing a player. So secretly choosing a player is the first time this has ever happened on the card.
Wow. History in the making.
All right. Another cool card is a new equipment called the Bloodforged Battle Axe. It's a one-mana equipment. I always like to start there. Equipped creature gets +2/+0. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, create a token that's a copy of Bloodforged Battle Axe, and you can equip it for 2. So you every time you get in with some damage
with
this thing on,
you create a token copy of the equipment.
Yeah, so you get more and more Bloodforged Battle Axes every single time you hit someone with it, which
That's
is kind of cool
because
you can
really
just like.
It's really good with Balin.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, just get them all in at the
same
time.
And do the tokens make more copies?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it doesn't say non-token.
Yeah, it's just create a token that's a copy
of
Bloodforged
Battle Axe. I have 2 Bloodforged Battle Axes on Balin.
And you swing and you make...
I swing and I make 2 more, and the next time I make 4 more. And they're tokens, so if you have, token doubling type effects...
That's why you put a doubling season in this deck, so you guys make
Does it work with Hammer of Nizan, where it automatically... Yeah. Whenever another equipment enters the battlefield under your control, you may attach it, so you would get around equip costs.
And there are cards that reduce equip costs as well, which we definitely want to play in this deck but that aren't in it. But yeah, this card's really interesting. I've never seen an equipment that has sentient ability to keep duplicating itself. Maybe it's not sentient, but hey.
I don't know if it's good, but it's cool.
All right, let's talk about the worst cards, all of them. Just kidding. So we've mentioned these before. The curses are just definitely a weak cycle for multiplayer commander. They are a lot of fun, but the power level varies a lot between them.
Yeah, especially since... I think one of these is the absolute worst curse. So,
there's definitely one.
So there's Curse of Vitality and Curse of Bounty. Curse of Vitality is 2 and a white. You an enchanted player. Whenever an enchanted player is attacked, you gain 2 life, and each opponent attacking that player does the same. That's horrible. Gaining 2 life is just not a big enough incentive to matter that often. So I don't even – and it's 2 and a white. Why is this not just like 1 white? At least if you're going to make it not powerful, make it cheap CMC-wise.
Especially because – the red one, arguably more powerful, just costs 1 red.
Yeah, and it makes gold, and that's something that like players will actually want. If I'm early in the game and I'm at 40 life, I don't care about 2 life unless I'm a life gain deck. I just don't like that card. Again, a life gain deck might want it, but those decks are often not attacking, so then even then. And then Curse of Bounty is the green one, 1 and a green, enchant player. Whenever enchanted player is attacked, untap all non-land permanents you control. Each opponent attacking that player does the same. So that one's much higher on the power level.
Yeah.
But it's so high, I almost don't want to give that to my opponents.
Yeah, imagine if you just did it against the wrong deck, like a Rishkar deck or any deck that has tappers. Like, oh my gosh, not a good idea. And this deck also, as it is built, has very few ways to actually use that ability. Like, oh, cool, everything untapped. I guess I'll re-equip some stuff.
Yeah, that's a really good point, like, right? If I'm going to use a symmetrical effect, and we call symmetrical effects anything that sort of affects everybody the same, so Howling Mine is a symmetrical effect, then I want my deck to be built in such a way that I'm taking advantage of it because I know I have that symmetrical effect in my deck. What does untapping all your stuff do for the cat deck that's better than what it does for your average deck?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, those cards are coming out. That's not good.
Huh.
Yeah.
Another good for absolutely nothing. Like this next card, Wing Shards. Sucks.
dramatic pause for effect. It was good. We don't use the dramatic silence that, you know,
that often. No.
Yeah, in radio, it's very powerful.
Ever since the camera started rolling, it's like, are they just taking a break? Wing Shards is one white for an instant. Target player sacrifices an attacking creature, and it has Storm, which means you copy it for each spell cast before it this turn.
What?
Yeah. I mean, like, what? Can you storm off on an opponent's turn, or it has to be your own spells? But either way.
When it's attacking, so it has to be on an opponent's turn, right?
Yeah. So one white for target, just by itself, let's say the player, like a smart player, just decides to go to combat because they can play their stuff in second main phase, unless they have something crazy to do, main phase one. Target player sacrifices an attacking creature. They get to choose.
Bad.
It could obviously not be good for you if they attack with multiple creatures.
They're going to choose. You're going to get their worst one.
Yeah, unless they somehow only attack with one creature.
I guess if Miri's out, they can only attack with one.
Right. So it's good with Miri. But here's the thing. It's like, yeah, right? You could make a justification if you're playing with Miri that you might play a Wing Shards type effect, or you could just pay one mana for Swords to Plowshares.
It's a really good point. The path to exile.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this kind of effect I hate. I hate when your opponent gets to choose. And in the occasional best-case scenario where they attack with their one Sigarda and they have to sacrifice it, but they can't, by the way, and that's because of Sigarda. Sorry, if they attack with one creature.
Of all the creatures in Magic,
I know, I chose Sigarda. Probably because I've always in my head been like, the only way I can kill Sigarda is by making them sacrifice it.
No, I can't.
Crap! yeah, this card's just not that good.
That's bad.
Yeah, it's just bad.
This is bad. Yeah. There's too many other options there, so much better.
Yeah, exactly.
The next one on the worst cards list is Grappling Hook. It's 4 mana for an artifact equipment, costs 4 to equip. Equipped creature has double strike, and whenever equipped creature attacks, you may have target creature block it this turn available, so you kind of force a block.
Cost 4 to cast, oh God, cost so 4 to equip. Yeah. Now, if you're playing the Nazan deck, it's a lot better. But, I mean, like, the double strike is cool, right? And you can instantly kill a creature if it's able to block.
You need 8 mana to do that, though.
Yeah. I had this card in my hand in Game Nights, and I was really looking forward to playing it because I was like, oh, finally, there's a way to get rid of the Ur-Dragon and make it block.
I think it was Butcher Malakir that you were going
to
get rid of.
Butcher, yeah. Something. Either way, I just couldn't.
You never got to that amount of mana.
Never got
right?
to that amount of mana yeah. to do it in the same turn. And that's sort of the effectiveness. I think the best equipment you can play and equip in the same turn and still be able to do other stuff.
Yeah. All right.
Another crappy card that I actually used to like a lot is one of my first rares.
The art's sweet.
Yeah. Phantom Nishoba. And this is the Phantom's line. I guess there's a bunch of Phantom cards.
From Kamigawa.
Yeah. 5, a green, and a white for a 0/0 with Trample. It's a Cat Beast Spirit. Phantom Nishoba enters the battlefield with 7 +1/+1 counters on it. So it's a 7 mana 7/7. Whenever Phantom Nishoba deals damage, you gain that much life. Old school lifelink. If damage would be dealt to Phantom Nishoba, prevent that damage, remove a +1/+1 counter from Phantom Nishoba. So it gets smaller over time and people block it. I just don't like this card because it's 7 mana and the deck is already incredibly mana hungry as is. Like, you'll notice this is a 7 mana card. Grappling Hook was essentially an 8 mana card. Just not worth it.
It's too much mana.
And, like, what are you... I mean, the Trample is nice.
But it's not broken. Like, for 7 mana, you can play, like, one side of Tooth and Nail.
Yeah. Or Avenger of Zendikar, one of the greatest green creatures ever printed. Which would not be good in this deck, by the way. But, yeah, you could do a lot of better things with 7 mana other than playing a 7/7 that's got +1/+1 counters on it.
7 mana spells are, like, game-winning type of spells at that amount of mana. Like, yeah. Or they're huge type of effects. Like, that is not a huge effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, there are some notable reprints in this deck, and I think you were saying this could be the most value-based deck in terms of the highest price point for the reprints.
Yeah, we didn't break down the decks, and it might not be the highest because a lot of times what happens is one of the other decks, like all the cards are worth like $2. Like the Dragon deck could very easily be sort of the most expensive deck. At the time we're recording this, not everything's spoiled, so you know the normal places can't do their full value breakdown. But I think that the Cat deck has the sort of highest top end mm-hmm. as far as, like, it has 3 or 4 cards that are sort of at the high number of value. I think the most – I could be wrong again. I'm sorry if I am. But it's among the most expensive reprints in the set is Mirari's Wake.
Mirari's Wake for show. So right now Mirari's Wake is an over a $10 card, I think. And
it won't be, once this is all known mm-hmm. because the price will drop – But it'll climb back up. It's one of those cards that's just going to see a lot of play. So I think even if you don't buy these decks, which you should, but if you don't, Mirari's Wake, if you ever want it, it's going to be a good time to pick it up maybe like the week these come out or the week after they come out.
Yeah. It's a cheap mana doubler, and it's one-sided. So it's a 3, a green, and a white. Creatures you control get +1/+1. So it's an anthem. And also, whenever you tap a land for mana, you add 1 mana to your mana pool of any type that land produced. So you get 2x on all your lands for 5 mana, and it anthems your creatures.
It's just so good. I even play it in some decks that don't even have very many creatures because the doubling mana is sort of worth it.
Yeah, right? Like, we were talking about Zendikar Resurgent.
Yep.
And that card's great because it doubles mana and draws you cards, but that costs 7 mana to get out.
Exactly.
Oftentimes, when you see a Mirari's Wake out on, like, turn 4 or 5, it's going to be lights out for everyone if you're not careful. Because
you kind of get 2 turns your next turn because you get twice the amount of mana.
It's definitely one of the best cards in the deck, too, especially with what the deck's trying to do.
And there's 2 others. I don't think we have to read them necessarily, but just so you know, there's some value there. There's Raksha Golden Cub, which was surprisingly expensive, and then Leone and Shikari, which I think Leone and Shikari is expensive because it's played in some other formats.
But yeah,
both of these have value.
Yeah, and they're great. Leone and Shikari, we should note, it's you can equip at instant speed with this card.
It kind of does Hammer of Nazan.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a lot. That's kind of crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's a very powerful effect.
You have to pay the equip cost
effect.
Still. But, yeah. But
instant speed, pretty good. I will also say that Lightning Greaves is in the deck, and that card is, for some reason, pretty expensive, even though that's been reprinted a bunch of times.
Because it goes in, like, you know, 70% of all commander decks or something. Like, it's crazy.
Yep, exactly. So pretty good.
Yeah. So the value on this deck, I think, is pretty good. All right. So we've taken a good broad look at all the stuff, the best stuff, the worst stuff. You kind of talked about this earlier, but, you know, here we go. We're going to do, like, add 10 or 12 cards, take away 10 or 12 cards as a quick upgrade to the deck. But when you started this process, like, what are you thinking? Oh, I need this. I need to get rid of this. Like,
you just need more mana in this deck. And I felt that really hard when I was playing Game Nights. But the deck itself doesn't have that many bad cards outside of, like, the 3 that we mentioned. Or 4 or 5 that we mentioned. There's, like, the deck works, right? It's a very straightforward design. It's very linear. Play creatures, have some cool effects with your equip abilities, and then just smash people's faces in. If you have Arabelle as your commander, then obviously you're getting in for a ton of damage every single time, and you're just trying to race people down. But that works really well 1v1. It's not so good multiplayer.
So did you sort of go through these upgrade recommendations thinking as if Nazan was going to be the commander, or were you sticking with Arabo?
I'm sticking with Nazan just because of the card advantage that you're getting from it, and already you want to cheat mana cost as much as possible in this deck, and so a lot of the cards I put in here that I wanted to add are the ones that, like, affect how easy it is to equip stuff or if they cost less. I actually went and looked at Wes's SRAM deck list to see, because he built one for Game Nights that was very equipment focused, and a lot of those equipment were like, sweet, this is definitely what I want to be doing.
Cool. Okay, well, we're going to move into the section where we're adding cards. So let's talk about some cards to add. Your first section is Value Tutor.
Yeah, so Birthing Pod, I think, is a card that you could put in this deck. There are a lot of very powerful creatures in this deck, and being able to Birthing Pod them out is really good, especially if it's like, I don't know, like, there are just some cats that got to get out of that bag, and where did we put them? Like, being able to grab Miri or something for the win is really important because of the ability to tap creatures down and stuff. Mm-hmm. Now I have blockers. Sun Titan, I think, is really good in this deck because you can get back a lot of your equipment, especially the 3-drops. And you want to do that.
Sun Titan is just a good card in general. So
you can play cards like Fauna Shaman as well. I think being able to find your
toolbox a little.
Yeah, because your creatures are how you're going to win the game if you're going to play with this strategy, not the equipment necessarily. It's the effects on the creatures and occasionally the effects on the equipment. So you want to be able to find your creatures.
If you're going to play Nazan, would you put, like, SRAM in the deck?
Probably, because Nazan doesn't care so much about cats. If you're playing with Arabo, then you have to, like, maintain cat status.
Right.
Otherwise, your deck's not as effective. The second
you gotta maintain
category,
your cat cred.
Yeah, mad cat cred. The second section is Protection. And Asceticism, I can't think of a better card for a Voltron-y deck. Asceticism is an enchantment that gives all of your creatures hexproof. And that is pretty good. It also gives you 1 and a green to regenerate target creature.
Wait a minute. Read.
It's old school hexproof. Yeah. Creatures you control can't be the targets of spells or abilities
your opponents control.
And
so they've. I just want to make sure it wasn't Shroud.
Yeah, me too. I actually looked at that beforehand. Shroud is the ability you want to stray away from in an equipment based deck.
Because you can't equip your stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why Steely Resolve would not be good in this deck.
No. And then, of course, Teferi's Protection.
Oh,
a brand new card.
It's funny you should say it.
Just houses other decks. I
feel like Teferi's, and I might be straying into hyperbole here because I'm excited, but I feel like it's going to just go into all the decks that have white in it.
why would you not play it?
I mean, I'm literally going through in my head all the decks I have that have white, and I'm like, five color Nurgle, yeah, should go in there.
Definitely should, because people always try and stop your stuff.
My rune deck, yep, should go in there. Like every deck I have that has white, it's like, yeah, it wants Teferi's protection. Like that card is going to be the white Cyclonic Rift, I think.
Yeah, and it's cheaper.
For now. I think it's like pre-ordering at an insanely high price. So.
Wow. Makes sense.
It's in the Vampire deck, just FYI.
Yeah, Teferi's Protection is just one of the most ridiculous cards I think I've ever seen in my life.
It's funny because after we record this one, we're going to record the Dragon episode. Spoiler alert. Teferi's Protection. Going to be good in that deck, too.
Yeah. Teferi's Protection, just a good card.
It's just good.
What are you supposed to do about it? It's just so good. Okay.
I like this next section.
More card draw.
More card draw. I like that.
This is definitely where I looked at Wes's list and went, I'm definitely putting Smuggler's Copter in this deck.
Smuggler's Copter. Surprising overperformer. In fact.
Always overperforming.
I'm spoiling it for the eventually when we do another overperformers episode.
It's definitely going on there.
Smuggler's Copter. Every time it hits the battlefield, I'm like, man, that card is good.
And it's cheap.
Yep.
Not
hard to kill.
Hard to kill. It does damage, too.
Always can find somebody to swing at.
Yeah. Not to mention if you have abilities like Hammer of Nizan out or other, like, making equip cost less, then you can happily strap that copter on with a bunch of swords and have it just swinging through the air.
It straps them to its blades. And
yeah.
Like
you don't want to get anywhere near that chopper.
Wow. Head for the... No!
It's a literal chopper at that point.
Head for the chopper!
Head for the chopper. And then Mask of Memory is another good equipment that has card draw on it. Now, I think they're...
So that's an underplayed equipment.
Yeah, for sure. And it's actually really good. It's cheap. It's not that hard to cast and equip. And if you're doing the equipment thing, then just go for it.
Play all the good equipments.
Play all the good equipments. Now, equipment-wise, there are a lot of cards that can make this deck way better. One of them is Oriok Steel Shaper. And he's basically a really buff dude that makes your equip cost one less.
He's like Gideon buff.
And it doesn't say to a minimum of one. So if it has an equip cost of one, it just goes straight to zero.
Zero.
Which is pretty cool. Yep.
There's also Pure Steel Paladin, which is sort of SRAM number two, right?
Yeah, whenever an equipment enters the battlefield under your control, you may draw a card. And then equipment you control have equipped zero as long as you control three or more artifacts.
That's really good.
So Metalcraft, yeah, very, very good card. And it's just white, so it's easy to get out. This is one of those cards I think you either play early, which is great, or you wait till later in the game, and people are like, oh, there's no way you can equip everything in the same turn, and then you just, bam, drop this guy on the battlefield, and you're off to the races.
The next one you have is Oriok Windwalker.
So this is three and a white for a flyer, and you can tap it to attach target equipment you control to target creature you control. So it's kind of like the other guy that plays one in the white to equip everything to him.
Yeah, it sort of slides him at instant speed around. Yeah. Makes it hard to block, right? If you have two creatures.
Makes it impossible to block.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a lot of equipment on the battlefield. And if you attack with two creatures, they have to block all one or have to split the blocks up and then...
Well, sometimes they won't be able to block either because they know either one they block, you slide the equipment of that one and eat their creature. So they just have to let both through. That can be really annoying. I want to throw one in the mix here. It's Sigarda's Aid, which we mentioned earlier, which allows you to play your equipment at flash speed, basically, and equip it instant speed, right?
Yeah, so whenever an equipment enters the battlefield under control, you may attach it to a target creature you control.
Oh,
so it's very similar to what Hammer of Nizan does, and a little redundancy in that regard is
that
not
card's
bad.
Good in an equipment deck because it only costs one white mana for an enchantment. So you just play it on turn one and get the benefit for the rest of the game.
And there are a lot of games where enchantments just never go away.
Yeah, it's really true.
More ramp, obviously. Signet, Urza's Incubator, I think should go in every single one of these decks.
I mean, in this deck, if you win away from the cats, Urza's Incubator might not be the greatest. You'd have to still stay cat heavy.
Yeah. But as it stands right now, in the cards that we've removed and added, we've taken away like two or three cats and added a bunch of things. I think in general, you just want to save mana as much as possible in this deck. And
I mean, I could see all the normal land ramp cards, Farseek, Rampant Growth, Cultivate, Kodama's Reach, that kind of stuff would all be good.
Yep.
It's green, so you can run all the normal green ramp.
And you're in white, so you should probably play some more board wipes, too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You want three, and usually you want four or more, but at least three.
Two, I mean, one of the board wipes is the one where everyone chooses a creature, and then you sack the rest, so it's not even that. It's not even the full board wipe.
It's Divine Reckoning.
Yeah, Divine Reckoning. So you want to have an actual board wipe in there that's cheap.
Yeah, something that you just know gets rid of stuff. You might even want... Yeah, and especially since if you're an equipment deck, you don't care as much about your creatures dying. Mm-hmm. You want to avoid the board wipes that get rid of all non-land permanents or something.
Yeah.
But you're fine with, because most of the time you'll have one or two creatures. Yep. So, it's because you're an equipment deck. So, Interesting, interesting. We have a big list of cards you should take out. You can check the show notes for those, for our recommendations as far as that concerned. We're not going to read them all or go through them all, but
for the most part, they're mana inefficient cards or just cards that cost a lot.
There's some stuff that we obviously mentioned on the worst cards. We wouldn't call them out and then be like, but keep it in there.
But keep it in
that
there.
That wouldn't make any sense at all.
Just because, you know.
All right, time for To the Listeners. What do you think about the cat deck? What cards are you excited to build around? Mm. What do you think should come in? What do you think you would take out? Always interesting to hear. And also, every time that you leave a comment on the YouTube page, you're basically leaving that information for other players to be able to check out and find out when they're building their version of the deck. So that's a good way we like to use the audience as sort of a brain trust to help everybody out. That's coming along later. So I do like it when you go and give your recommendations in the comments because, you know, I've learned about a lot of cards just going through the comments and being like, we should have thought of that.
Yeah.
And then it's something we can call out later if that situation comes up again. So it helps us out, helps everybody out.
And call out the person that made the comment.
So please leave us your wisdom.
Yeah. Every time you leave a comment, a cat gets its wings. A kitten gets its wings. Make sure, if you're interested in purchasing any of these decks, you go to cardkingdom.com/C17. That's a new affiliate link, just so you know, because it's C17 time, Commander 2017. All of these decks are awesome. I don't think any of them are my, like, overall, like, huge favorites. Like, I would, even though I don't like the cat deck as much as the other ones, it's still pretty sweet. And
There's some sweet cards in there.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Hammer of Nazan. I think that with the commander is actually a really interesting deck to build. I don't have a green-white deck yet, so who knows? Maybe I'm going to go down that path.
I'm buying all of them, but if I had to choose, it's the Wizards deck.
Yeah.
But if you use the affiliate link, you know you're going to buy them anyway. You can support the show while you do it. We really do appreciate it. Our other sponsor is Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro, they got the playmats. They got the sleeves. They got the deck boxes.
Wow.
All the stuff that will make you look cool at the table because you'll be like, I'm playing Ur-Dragon. I also have an Ur-Dragon deck box. I got Ur-Dragon sleeves, and I got an Ur-Dragon playmat. I'm awesome.
I don't know if I would think you're that awesome.
But I would think I'm that awesome.
I would
That's
be
really
like,
all that matters.
This kid's dedicated.
That's a good point, which is awesome. I like dedicated people.
Yeah, dedicat, Ed.
Listen, all you dedicated people out there, you're awesome.
You are awesome. All right, let's move on to the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
I got something cool. Jimmy, you got something cool. Check it out.
Oh, you
got
to look in these.
Let's look at the close-up thing here. Here, I'll sort of half stand. Well, the cool thing about the shirts, actually. Okay, wait.
I'm not taking my shirt off. I'm just showing you the logo, I swear.
For the people in the car just listening, well, this end step's not going to be for you because you can't see anything. But you should know, we have new merchandise coming out soon. We got our samples for some Game Nights t-shirts. And the t-shirts have the Game Nights logo.
On the front.
on the front. And they also have something on the back. So...
Oh, I'm turning.
Okay.
Can you see it?
Yep, you can see it.
Nice.
So it has Game Nights here. Let me straighten it. There we go. It has Game Nights in text on the back. It's nice. It's sort of a nice, like, splattered paint design that we did. It's a textured red. The shirt is black.
Josh is giving me too much credit. He designed all of this. Well, we had someone design the logo, but then Josh put the shirt together.
What I did is I did a crappy version of it, and then I sent it back to the guy that designed the logo and said, hey, can you do this good? And he did.
That's what a director does, everybody.
So, yeah, that's the exciting end step. You are very soon going to be able to purchase Game Nights t-shirts. This is our second piece of merchandise ever.
Mm-hmm.
Patrons
at
the required level.
Yeah,
you will get it for free. So we're going to go through that whole process soon. Now, it's not ready quite yet. We have a few little tweaks and changes because we never, ever get anything and go, yeah, that's good as it is. We always are like, I wish it was like this. I wish it was like that. But once we get it perfect, then... these are going to be out there. They're going to be for sale, and we think you're going to want them. So keep your eye out on that. If you don't follow us on Twitter right now at CommandCast, that's going to be a really good place to find out when they're available and where you can get them. So
heck yeah.
Yeah, that was sort of inside the world of Magic. I apologize for that. But the shirts are cool. I'm excited.
Yeah, it was cool, though.
It was cool. You know what else is cool?
Oh, no.
The Masters of Modern podcast, our sister podcast, Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. They talk about the modern format and all things competitive Magic. Those guys are really cool. They know their stuff. If you go to Twitter at the MMcast, you can follow them, and you can also find their show right next to us if you go to collected.company, which is our Magic hub.
And our editor for the show is Terry Robertson.
Hello, Terry.
Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for doing the Living Card animations. You can find him on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG. Make sure you go to youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast if you want to watch the video versions of the show. Hey, hey.
I also want to give a a quick shout out to Jeffrey because he did recently a whole bunch of sort of overhauls of our graphics.
Oh, for game nights.
For game nights. Yeah. And if you haven't seen the latest game nights, you'll probably notice there's some added effects for a lot of the animations. A lot of that is from Jeffrey, and he's continuing to work with us because what's our philosophy? Continued improvement and evolution. So thank you, Jeffrey, for helping us to continue to improve and evolve.
And thank you, audience, for also helping us continue improve by leaving your comments in the comment section below about how we can improve.
All right, everybody. On that note, thank you for listening and watching.
And we will see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.